couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, and this week it's kind of an up-and-down weekend.
Hey, that's my line. You totally stole that from me from the show prep.
I did. And as we go through Pixar's Up into the Heavens, and Sam Raimi drags us to hell. So,
that's right.
You know, it's going to be a fun one. But before we get to that...
For stealing my line, send me one of your buttons, and I will curse you.
Okay. I'll get onto that. But before that, I'd like to tell our lovely listeners how they can get a hold of us.
Yes.
And that is at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can also get us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys at the Movies. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735. We did get a couple of voicemails this week, but you know, it's negotiable as to whether we're going to play them.
But you're too lazy to actually send them, record them and everything.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Or were they, there's one from me just calling you names.
Really?
Yeah,
that's the one we need to play.
Well, it wasn't that much.
The angry Kevin Carr voicemail. Where are you?
Where are you?
Bleep, 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 bleep.
Anyway, speaking of angry movies, should we start? Or is there something else you want to bring up and talk about?
No, there isn't.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the first movie then. This is Drag Me to Hell. A loan officer won't give a mortgage extension to an old gypsy woman, and the old lady ends up cursing her with a spirit that haunts her for 3 days before it wants to drag her to the depths of hell.
Another extension is out of the question.
Where will I live?
I'm really sorry.
Soon it will be you who comes begging to me.
Someone has cursed you. Is the Lamia, the most feared of all demons. For the first 3 days, the spirit torments its victims. After that, it will come to take you.
Take me where?
To burn in hell for eternity.
Can we just start with explaining that it's not just any spirit, it's a goat spirit?
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually a real spirit. If you Google, what, Larnia?
The Lamia?
Lamia, if you Google that.
Or the Lamia, whatever it is.
It's a woman who then became a child killer, and then she became a demon.
I see.
So it actually has basis in history. In
right.
Fact, apparently fact.
And Sam Raimi, he's known to do that, because the tree that rapes people from Evil Dead was also from real history.
Really?
Well, yeah, you can look it up if you want to. It's probably right.
Is it the
right.
Mike Tyson tree or something like that?
Shh. Hey, dude, too soon. Mike Tyson joke.
Too soon.
His
too
daughter
soon.
Just like, died.
Yeah, but
that's
he raped
mean.
A woman like 10 years ago.
Oh, that's mean. No, I saw his documentary. Mean. He said he didn't do it.
Oh, that's right. And OJ's looking for the real killers, isn't he?
Can we get back on topic of the movie that we saw, Drag Me to Hell?
Let's stop talking about the real demons and talk about the fake demon in the movie.
Those are way more.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to know your thoughts. Well, I kind of know your thoughts on them because I saw your tweets after you read this.
Yeah, I know. Twitter usually spoils my reviews. It's like not even worth writing reviews anymore.
But see, you're not a big horror movie fan. You're a bit of a pansy.
No, but I am a comedy, like horror comedy movie fan. Like I love Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness. Like Sam Raimi's take on horror is very kid with a magnifying glass. Like he is very mean about his horror movies, and I love that about him. Like I love that sick, dark, twisted nature that he has when he makes a movie like this, because it's scary, but it's also hilarious.
Well, fans of Sam Raimi's early horror movie stuff will know that he's hugely influenced by the Three Stooges.
Right.
And if you don't know that, watching this movie, you will be like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Because he's got that. In fact, whenever he makes a movie and has like, either people in it that are cast, but they don't have a line in their background or whatever, he literally credits them as fake Shemps. He talks about Shemp all the time, which is a Three Stooges reference. If you watch this movie, there is tons of Three Stooges slapstick humor in it. If the Three Stooges were demons from hell,
this is how it would go.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? Here's the overarching theme that I got from Drag Me to Hell. First of all, this movie...
Alison Lohman looks great when she's in a t-shirt, no bra, and rain.
She does. I would not argue that with you. Also, this movie was made with huge brass balls. Because okay. Let's just say, I don't want to spoil the ending because it's just too good. The ending is awesome.
Yeah.
One of the best endings I've seen in a horror movie in a long time. Sure. In fact, if Terminator would have ended anywhere similar to Drag Me to Hell, Terminator would have been awesome as well.
You know, I will agree with you on that one.
But also, the movie starts in the first 5 minutes by killing what can only be described as a young child.
Not a young child, maybe like an 11-year-old kid.
Yeah, but in an awesome way, in a big, awesome way.
Okay.
And that takes some balls. And this movie was made with gigantic balls. So.
Well, I have to say, when the movie actually started, the first scene, which is what he does, he also does this with the soundtrack, where he's like, it's like really loud and then really soft. I mean, to excess, which really, I took this movie as more or less, not only was Sam Raimi looking at all the horror conventions, because it has every single cliche. It's got the old gypsy woman, it's got a graveyard scene.
Right.
You know, it's got every little horror movie cliche.
It's got Justin Long. I mean, that's another horror cliche.
And he throws all those in there, but it's that whole thing where you have to know the rules before you can really kind of make fun of them. And he knows all the rules, not just of horror movies, but of his own movies.
Right.
And the first sequence I thought was okay, but I wasn't quite sold on it yet because it almost took itself too seriously. I mean, it was intense, but it was then later on that things just got ridiculous.
Just crazy.
Just wild. Ridiculous. Yeah, you'd watch it and you'd be like, there is no excuse for that. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
I was in the theater at the screening, and I'm howling at this movie. I am laughing out loud, belly laughs. I'm laughing, I think, harder at this movie than I've laughed at anything this year so far.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Even Terminator.
Well, and, I mean, Terminator was pretty funny.
Yeah, and I'm howling, and it's like the people around me, about half of them got the joke too, but maybe wasn't laughing as much. The rest of the people were just horrified because I'm laughing at the most statistic, just twisted things that people are looking at me like, why in the world would you find that funny? I'm like, because it is. Because
it's really funny. Yeah.
Because it's hilarious. It's a return to him doing the Evil Dead. This could be Evil Dead 4.
Essentially. And you know what? And I think fans of the Evil Dead franchise are going to go into this and be satisfied and be okay with the fact that he made this instead of doing Evil Dead 4. You know, because this is very much along those lines. And I tell you what, it's hysterical. It is very scary at times because that score, just creeps me out. It's gross at times, which I think is often fun. Alison Lohman gets her jaw. A lady with no teeth tries to chew off Alison Lohman's jaw. Tell
more
me what's not
once.
Hot about that. Yeah,
more
and it happens
once.
Like three times. So, you know, I mean, it's just this big, like, I don't know. It's just this big punch in the gut. With this awesome horror comedy. And you know what? It's perfect because it's Sam Raimi. The way he delivers it is just the right way. It's just the amount of finesse necessary to make it an awesome experience.
And before he did the Spider-Man movies, he was tinkering around with trying to become respectable with movies like The Quick and the Dead. Mm-hmm. And he even made The Gift, which was an okay thriller kind of horror movie, but it took itself too seriously. This is his return to the campy, goofy Three Stooges style of movie making that we saw, that he perfected in The Evil Dead. I mean, there are scenes in there that are like almost, I mean, there's a goat that swears at people in this movie.
Exactly.
Awesome.
All right, final grade time. I'm giving it a totally rocks.
It rocks. I have to say, I agree with you. I'm terrified.
And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies, just rolling on through, laughing evilly at the end of that last segment. That's right. I went there.
I don't know if, evilly maybe, not maniacally, because that would be the most bored, maniacal villain ever. He's just like, you're like, hee, hee, hee.
Wow. But we move now from the depths of hell to the skies above with Pixar's Up, in which an old man ties thousands of balloons to his house and floats away to have an adventure in a tropical jungle.
Ah! Please let me in.
No. All right. Where are we?
Hey, look, a dog.
I Hi there. My name is Doug. My master made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel!
With my Wilderness Explorer GPS, we'll never be lost. Oops.
Now, can I talk a little bit? We talked about how I went up on the balloons myself before we talk about the movie. If you want to go back, Fat Guys in the Movies and Film School Rejects has the video of that. And that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And it's the same chair. I also had a chance to sit in on a sort of like a, not really a press conference, but a group discussion with Pete Docter.
Right.
And Jonas Rivera, I think is the guy's, the producer of the movie. Right. And that video is going to be online as well, so we'll link to it in the show notes.
You know why that's exciting? Because these guys made a really awesome movie.
It was
a really sweet film that I personally believe it is one of the most beautiful stories that the single most beautiful story that Pixar has put on film.
Wow!
Because it's really the first time that they've taken on the human experience, the human story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have like Toy Story, and it's about friendship and stuff like that. And then you have Wall-E and it's a love story and that's great. But this is the first time it's a story about a man, not necessarily an old man, and his life. And it starts with him as a child meeting the love of his life. And then, they grow old together and then she's gone. It's about him dealing with that. And it's about dealing with loss and dealing with moving on. And I thought, and you know what? I don't know about you, Kevin Carr, but 20 minutes into this movie, I was already crying. Like, this movie pulls on heartstrings like it's its job.
Well, I'll say in terms of the first 20 minutes type thing, I was impressed at the fact of how many individual entire movies they crammed into this without making it seem like they crammed too many movies in. They have the whole story of Carl's life and his love, who is Ellie, this little girl that he ends up growing old with and falling in love with, and their whole story is brilliantly told, mostly without dialogue. In fact, the whole first section of the movie, it hits every note, and you know exactly what's happening, and you fill in the blanks, but it doesn't hit you over the head with it. And then you've got the whole story of him, you know, tying the balloons to the house and floating away. You've got the story of Russell, who's the little wilderness explorer kid, who has his own arc that is also expertly woven into the story. And yeah, it has what you could say is cliche, but that's fine. I mean, cliches are cliches for a reason.
But it feels like a very real story. You know, even like Russell's arc, it feels like a very real, very relatable story, you know?
And the thing is, I will say, you're right in the sense that it's the first human. I wouldn't say it's the first human story because if you talk about something like Wall-E or even Ratatouille, which the focus on is the rat and then of a robot, but there was a lot of humanity behind both those characters. But this is the first one that really makes it, because even like The Incredibles, which was really the only other movie that really had humans as the main characters. That one was much more about adventure, and it wasn't that deep emotional arc that this movie and like Wall-E or Ratatouille had. It does have the humanity. It's just that it's the first one really about humans that explores that part of them.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah. No. It's just a beautiful film. And it's, you know, on top of the fact that they've told a great story, and I think this is the one thing that you really have to appreciate about Pixar, is that they start with a great story.
Yeah.
And the animation complements the great story. And this is a perfect example of that. You have a great story, and then it is on top of that, you have this beautifully animated world, and you have these characters with just tons of charisma, and Ed Asner voices Carl Fredrickson in his old age, and he's just awesome. He just breathes life into the character.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this great... you know, there's this great connection between these two characters, and there's a lot of funny moments. The other thing that I like about Up is that there are moments that remind you that you're watching a kid's movie, because at certain points in this movie, you almost have to be reminded that you're watching a kid's movie, you know, because the first half of this movie is really sweet and you know, very sad. And then the second half of the movie, there are some moments that are just goofy.
Yeah.
But goofy in a very fitting way. You know, they fit perfectly.
Well, and one of the things Pixar does is they are able to take what would in any other movie be just some stupid cliche cheap trick. Like in Terminator, Robert Fury on Film School Rejects wrote a whole thing about how stupid the little girl was in Terminator. It was them trying to redo Newt basically from Aliens. And anytime you throw in a kid or throw in an animal or throw in something cute, it's just annoying in a movie. And there really is no pragmatic reason for Doug the dog in this movie, but the way they handle him is so brilliant and warm and fuzzy
but
and lovable.
But it's a talking dog.
It's awesome. There's nothing... It's like, if you were to say any other movie, give me any other movie, whether it's Cinderella or, you know, some kid's movie, or if it's Drag Me to Hell, and you say, oh, they're going to throw in a dog. Isn't that cute? I'd be like, oh, that's just a cheap joke or a cheap trick. Not in this one. It is, they're able to work it in, and it's brilliant and hilarious, and anyone who has ever had a dog is like, yeah, that's exactly what goes through a dog's mind.
Right, exactly. Oh, you know, and that's another thing that I mentioned to our managing editor at Film School Rejects, Cole, as we were exiting our upscreening this week, was that the way that they handled the talking dogs was really great.
Brilliant. It was brilliant.
They, you know, you've seen in the trailers, they have these collars that allow them to talk, but the way they speak sounds like the stream of consciousness that would be going on in a dog's head.
Absolutely. Now, the other...
And that to me it just works perfectly.
One other thing I do want to talk about Up is the fact that it's the 10th Pixar movie, and this is what's impressive about Pixar. I don't think any other studio, director, or artist has this kind of a record. This is the 10th movie they've done, and they've all been great. And
yeah, seriously.
You know, you take anybody, any director, actor, studio, whatever, you put 10 in a row, there's going to be a stinker in there somewhere. And
even like people like Spielberg.
Oh yeah, but
he's
not
a stinker.
Not Pixar. I mean, Pixar's done 10 in a row, and they're only degrees of greatness. So you sit there and be like for me, I'm like Cars was like okay, but it was still a great movie. It just wasn't that level of awesomeness as like WALL-E or The Incredibles. At least in my opinion, I know people who love Cars. It's one of their favorite ones. The other thing, as the 10th movie, this is the first one they're doing in 3D. And the word is John Lasseter.
The 3D looks great.
It's brilliant. And John Lasseter has come in and basically said every other Pixar movie following this is going to be 3D. It's just bottom line is going to come out.
Well, and you know what I like about the 3D, and I think we talked about this when we talked about Coraline earlier in the year, is that there's no cheap 3D tricks in this movie.
Yeah.
In fact, there's really no pop-out moments at all. Mm-mm. It's all depth. It's all just depth of field.
Yeah.
And that to me is amazing. It just really expands the world in which these characters exist, and I think that is where 3D can win for me.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not really a big fan of 3D. I think studio filmmakers use it wrong. But you're right. I mean, who has made 10 straight great movies? And it's hard to say that this is their best movie, even though it's the best one I've seen lately because it's the most recent scene. The one I've seen, but I can say with conviction that this is the most beautiful story, the most touching and emotionally impactful movie that they've made
so far. One thing about the 3D, and I'll add this, and you'll see this if you go to the video that we have online where we talked to Jonas Rivera. He talks about the fact when they decided to, they said we want to look at it as the audience is looking out a window as opposed to things coming out at them, and that way they can just see the depth. And that's why they didn't choose to do the cheap tricks or the jabbing in the face, which they even though Monsters vs. Aliens was really cool in 3D, they had one or two of those in there. They don't have that in Pixar.
Right.
The other thing he said is they used it to actually emphasize the emotion of the scene when they're in the dark house and it's gloomy and dreary. They lessen the depth of field. They actually use the 3D to make it look flatter and more drab, whereas sort of like in The Wizard of Oz, when you go outside, suddenly you get the depth and you're flying through the air and it's all in brilliant colors. So it shows that they really knew what they were doing and they went in with a consciousness. Now, I like gimmicky 3D just as much as probably more than anybody else, like, you know, My Bloody Valentine. But that's for a movie that's made for that. Whereas Up, it's there to enhance the movie experience.
Exactly. I agree.
That's all I have to
say. I'm giving this
a
totally rocks. Like, totally rocks through the roof, man.
I give it a rocks too. It's one of the best films of the year so far.
Easily. And when we come back, we're going to find out other stuff about it.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We have gushed all over Drag Me to Hell and gushed all over Up. And now it's time to talk about how they're going to do this weekend and how other movies did last weekend.
Right.
You want to go after this first, Neil?
I will in a second.
Why, you got to pull up your box office numbers?
Yep.
There you go.
Well, we had Memorial Day weekend last weekend, correct?
Well, that's what gets so confusing, because they're like, okay, you got the 4-day weekend, and then you got Terminator, which actually had a 5-day weekend, which
right.
didn't help it all that well.
No,
so,
it didn't. It still didn't win. What I think here's the point. So in the 4-day weekend, we had Night at the Museum 2, we had Terminator Salvation, we had Star Trek, top three in order.
Yeah.
And what I think is most interesting about the box office last week is that Terminator Salvation, in its entire by Monday, so from like Thursday to Monday, only made $65 million. Night at the Museum, from Friday to Monday, made
with one fewer day,
made $70 million.
Yeah.
So I think that just shows how much Terminator blew. You know.
Well, everyone's predictions on Night at the Museum were relatively accurate. People are going, "Oh, it's going to be making, you know, $60 to $70 million,
right,
in that range for the weekend." But they were predicting Terminator being 80, 90. People were saying, "Oh," and you know what? Here, I'm going to rant just a little bit. Everyone's complaining. People are going, "Oh, we haven't had the $100 million weekend yet." I think we talked about this before.
Yeah. I think we talked about it on last week's show.
Yeah. Again, you only had two of those last year.
Right.
And we'll get those. Harry Potter and Transformers will both do that.
Right.
But, you know, so you didn't get it. Because actually, if you look at that happening in May, is actually relatively rare. You know, the year before that, yeah, you had Spider-Man, but then, you know.
Yeah. I mean, here's the other deal. Terminator did okay.
Yeah.
The problem with Terminator is it's a movie that cost $200 million to make, and it only made 70 in its opening weekend, and it'll be very lucky to recoup its budget.
And here's what killed it, I think, and I think we've talked about this before, maybe off the air, but it was a movie that was not very well received by people that should have well received it.
Yes.
The internet crowd, people like us, dudes, you know, guys, especially guys who love the series, were kind of like, the best I've heard about it were people like going, "It wasn't terrible." That's like the
right.
best thing I've heard anyone say.
Right.
So
yeah. You know, so there it is. Other good news, Star Trek made another $30 million last week.
Whoop, whoop.
Star Trek continues to roll on. Now,
it
this
is
weekend,
currently the top grosser of 2009.
Right, which I think is great. It is the movie that deserves to be the top grossing film of the year.
Yes.
But now we come to a different situation. We come to this weekend where we've got last weekend's winner was a family movie, a kids movie, if you will. And this weekend's biggest release, also a kids movie.
Yeah.
Interesting. Situation we have here.
I do think that Up's going to have a little bit of competition there with Night at the Museum, because that thing has some decent legs going through the weekend, and it's doing okay through the week. And also, actually, as great as Pixar movies are, they have not traditionally been huge money makers out of the gate. They've been these slow burns. Even like WALL-E, which was fantastic last year, it did well, but it wasn't a $100 million weekend movie.
Right. Well, and I think the other interesting thing is that Night at the Museum is still in more theaters than Up. And so, you know, but I mean, you're looking at most Pixar openings, including WALL-E made, what, $63 million in its opening weekend at the end of June. I think that Up, I keep calling it Pixar's Up because I want that to be the title of the film.
Yes.
But I think Up will be in the $50 million range, but I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah,
really
it's gonna. I still don't know. If I were to put money on it, I'd say Up's gonna win the weekend over Night at the Museum, simply because Night at the Museum already got a bunch of people to see it.
Right.
But it's gonna be a close weekend. And then Drag Me to Hell, I think Drag Me to Hell's good for 30.
Yeah, you know, and I think I don't think it's gonna be a huge winner. But then again, it's not a movie, at least to my knowledge, that was made for a lot of money. So. You know, so that's how horror movies go. And I think Drag Me to Hell is going to get pushed by some good buzz. It's getting, you know, people are out there and they're liking it and they see that it's a lot of fun. So I think, yeah, I think it's good for a $25 to $30 million stretch. And it, you know what? It's really the only major horror-ish movie that's coming out for a while. So
well, it's
might
it's
have some legs to it.
Its demographics would be going for the Terminator demographic. And I think people who saw Terminator, people who want to see Terminator saw it and they're done. They're not going to go watch it again. They'll go see Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think it'll do, I think it'll have some legs going into June. Because there's really not another horror movie. The rest is like all family or blockbuster or, you know, adult comedy with like The Hangover and stuff like that. So,
yep.
But I think
there is My Life in Ruins. That's a horror movie, isn't it?
But I think your top five is going to be, I think you're going to get Up, Night at the Museum, Star Trek, Drag Me to Hell, and then insert miscellaneous number five.
Maybe Terminator.
Maybe Terminator. Yeah, no, Terminator will probably finish fifth.
Yeah.
So that's my prediction. Bam. I know I'm right. Don't argue.
Do you want to blast through? We've got some Fat Guy Fives that we want to
We do. We have two Fat Guy Fives this week, and I think we'll do the can I do the first one, you do the second one type thing?
Sure.
Okay, so the first one is our five favorite Pixar movies, which we did together. This was easy. Of course, they've got 10, so we have some to pick from. It's not like our five favorite movies directed by Pete Docter or anything.
Well, it's like out of six or anything like
that. Right, no, it's 5 out of 10, and these are our five favorite. And number one is WALL-E. I think that's the obvious choice from last year. Cute little robot falls in love.
Well, these aren't
blah,
in
blah,
actually
blah.
Any order, but these are our five. But it is that is my favorite, yes.
Yes, definitely. WALL-E. The Incredibles, which I think a lot of people agree is their best movie up to this date. Definitely Brad Bird's best movie, and that's saying something there.
And arguably one of the best superhero movies out ever.
Ratatouille, fantastic little film.
Yes, sir.
Really blew everybody away. Toy Story, where it all kind of started for Pixar. Mm-hmm. And then sneaking in there is Up.
Up. It was so touching, and they've really perfected their Pixar formula. A brilliant, brilliant film.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and it's really hard to say whether that's their best movie, but it feels like every year we go through this where we are at least questioning, is this year's Pixar movie their best film?
Yeah. And
that,
nice
to me,
is
amazing.
And if you look at this list... I think they're all, with the exception of Brad Bird, he's got The Incredibles and Ratatouille. Mm-hmm. All the rest are each done by a different person.
Yeah.
John Lasseter did Toy Story.
Andrew Stanton did WALL-E.
Yep.
And it's what I think is funny is a lot of these are their second movies. I mean, Toy Story obviously wasn't John Lasseter's second movie. But like WALL-E was Andrew Stanton's, you know, he did Nemo first.
Yeah.
You know, who did Ratatouille again?
Brad Bird. That was
Brad Bird gets two on the list.
Well, but The Incredibles, he did the Iron Giant first. That was really kind of his seminal animated film.
Right. And then Up is Pete Docter's second film because he did Monsters, Inc.
Exactly. So. So and in keeping with the going up and going down, we're going to talk about Dragging Me to Hell again. With the five best times we've had watching a horror movie. And
I didn't get to contribute a lot with this one because have not really ever had much of a good time watching horror movies.
Well, I'm going to change the last one on the list, and I'll see that for you and let you talk about it. But the first three are mine. First one I'll just talk about is Drag Me to Hell. I just had so much fun at that movie simply because I went in not knowing what to think and just absolutely loving it. Never been a huge fan of that kind of movie, and it just made me laugh hysterically. The next two were, I go to these 24-hour movie marathons, and these were times I saw these movies in a big crowd. Dead Alive, which is Oscar winner Peter Jackson's Splatterfest from New Zealand, about zombies, and it is just an insane movie. Not that fun to necessarily watch on television, like just on video at home. In a theater full of like 200 sleep-deprived, smelly guys, it is
which is exactly the theater experience that you should all aspire to have.
I just described these things, though. You've been to them.
Yes. This is why I only do one a year at best.
Well, these are so funny, and it was so hilarious to watch this because it's this action, goofy, comedy kind of slaughter fest, and it was hilarious to watch. Very similarly, in the next experience was The Last House on the Left, not the remake, the original, which, again, they showed at one of these horror movie marathons. It's actually kind of a disturbing, uncomfortable movie to watch at home.
Right.
But when you watch it in a crowd full of a bunch of people who are high on caffeine, and maybe some people high on something else, it is hilarious because all the just the terrible elements of movie making float to the top of this movie. And it is so ridiculous and so stupid and so amateurishly put together, but hilarious at the same time. Again, you can hoot and holler. Mm-hmm. And that's what they didn't capture with the remake. The remake was just disturbing. Yeah.
Right.
I'll let you do the next one.
Oh, the next one is Evil Dead. Yes. This is one that I sadly have never seen in a theater, which I can't wait to do.
I saw it in a theater when Bruce Campbell was there and then talked about it.
Wow.
Which was an interesting
awesome film experience.
Yeah.
Although Army of Darkness might be a better movie. Can I say that?
Bruce Campbell pointed this out when he was there when they showed Evil Dead at one of these.
Yeah.
He made the point, he said Evil Dead 2, they kind of got the goofiness in check. They knew what they were doing. The first one, they were really kind of, I mean, Sam Raimi was directing it to be goofy and extreme,
right,
but they were acting like it was doggone serious. They were like in a serious movie. And like, there's a line, he's like, we can't chop her up, she's a friend of ours, you know, that kind of thing. And again, that's the movie with the tree rape in it. So that's always fun to watch in an audience.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Let me give you the last one, and because I think you probably enjoyed this better than Night of the Creeps. How about 30 Days of Night?
30 Days of Night was a great film experience. I had a blasty,
and that was at a press screening, and you were it was me and you. It was a relatively it was like five of us there. It was like you and me and Colin Mack from Mack in the Movies, and Lori Pearson from Critics.com, and she does stuff for. She takes note of all
they
the violence
that, it's,
and
Kids
and
sex. In Mind.
Kidsinmind.com. Mm-hmm. And so she will account for all the you know, stuff that would be objectionable.
Right.
And she's furiously scribbling. And there's a scene where the little girl vampire gets like decapitated. Mm-hmm. I look back at her, I go, did you get that? And she's just like furiously writing everything down.
She went through seven legal pads with that movie. But I love the way that movie was shot. That's probably one of my favorite. Easily my favorite vampire movie of all time.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
There.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. No, I had fun with that. But you know, I've had fun with some horror movies, I suppose.
That's true.
In theaters. I just everyone else around me has fun because I jump and scream like a little girl. It's terrible.
You do. You do. You like get on the chair and you squirm. It's disgusting.
Speaking of squirming, we're gonna squirm our way into the last segment in a moment. And we're wrapping you up here in Fat Guys at the Movies, and I think over the course of the show, we've determined that I have a busted wheel in my Segway machine. Get it?
That worked better. That actually was probably the best one you've done in the show, but then again, that's not saying much.
Right. So moving on into our epic final segment here, it is time, as always, for the world-famous DVD Roundup. So, and I know you have like 100 this week.
Again.
So I'm going to go first just to get them out of the way because mine are obviously better.
Okay.
But the first one is the Blu-ray edition of Children of Men. That's the Blu-ray pick of the week.
Sure.
Because that movie just looks phenomenal on Blu-ray. And actually, I've long ostracized Universal Home Video for their awful Blu-ray releases because they don't put anything else on them besides the special features that you would get from the DVD.
Yeah.
So unless it's like a really good-looking movie like Children of Men, there's really no value in buying the Blu-ray. This one, however, has some very cool stuff.
How's it sound? Because I know there's the whole war sequence.
Sounds great.
Brilliant.
The sound.
Do you need to
sound
leave the room or anything?
Movie, no, the sound design in this movie is great. That it's shot so beautifully.
Yeah.
And you know, just go out and get it. And also on Blu-ray and DVD, Powder Blue, which is the movie that will forever be known as the one where Jessica Biel strips naked and covers herself in wax.
What studio did that one?
Doesn't matter.
Well, I want to know because I want to bug them and say, why didn't you send me my Blu-ray of that?
I don't. It's some small house. I'll get you the information after the show.
You should, because literally, like when I did I've reviewed both True Blood season one on DVD, on Blu-ray, and Dexter
Lizzie
season
Kaplan
two
naked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mm-hmm. Dexter season two on DVD, and I'm just like, hey, you know what? These are great movies. These are great shows. The fact that they got like naked people in it, or like Julie Benz in Dexter is hot, and then Jamie Murray, who plays his psycho girlfriend, his other psycho girlfriend.
Yes.
Totally hot. Yes. Totally hot. So
I agree. But no, Powder Blue, it's actually kind of an awful movie. But I would recommend going and renting it because this is, you know, this is that.
It's Jessica Biel.
One chance to see Jessica Biel doing the thing with the thing. So go.
I don't know if I'd take one chance, but we'll move on.
Well, yeah, you know, you never know.
Okay, my first one, my pick of the week, I have to admit, now, this is a fun movie, but I do have to preface this by saying not a whole lot came out this week.
Yeah, it was a pretty awful week.
I mean, you got like stuff like New in Town with Renee Zellweger that nobody saw, and then Killshot, which they tried to release.
That
in,
really nobody saw?
Do you know how much it made in the theaters? It made
$1.50.
It made less than $20,000. Gross.
Wow, that's
in the theaters.
Zissix Road bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. But this one, it got a lot of buzz, partly because of Film School Rejects, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
That's right.
It's released by the Asylum.
We're promoting quality film here.
Oh, it's awesome because it's like this really, really cheesy sci-fi channel kind of movie. Stars Lorenzo Lamas and Deborah Gibson. What more could you want than Lorenzo Lamas, Deborah Gibson, a mega shark, and a giant octopus?
I could have used a little bit longer sex scene in that movie, but otherwise, I mean, Deborah Gibson could have
just go
committed
get,
to that role a little bit more, in my opinion.
She was in Playboy, so you can just go get that.
Yeah, that's not the same.
Anyways.
Those pictures don't move.
And also The Closer season four, Kira Sedgwick, which is really the only, it's like the top seller of this week, but that's because there's not a whole lot. It's an okay show. It's in its fourth season, so definitely good. I do want to give a little bit of an honorable mention. For some reason, just sort of the way things have been released, I've gotten like four or five Westerns sent to me. Paramount released El Dorado and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, which I hadn't seen. They're John Wayne movies. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is a little bit, is okay. It's a little bit stuffy. But El Dorado is awesome. I mean, for gunfight sequences, awesome. It's a Howard Hawks film. Mm-hmm. Robert Mitchum is in it. There's also Catlow, which was released also a couple weeks ago with Yul Brynner and Richard Crenna, of course, with 70s era hair in the 1870s, apparently.
I see.
It also has Leonard Nimoy, and you get to see his butt, which isn't like a turn on for me, but I just thought I'd let people know that.
Okay.
Okay. And then also The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly got a Blu-ray release this month.
Oh, nice.
Which is, it's stupid. Well, you know what? If you've gotten the double disc set, the collector's edition, it's, I think, all the same special features. There's no extra Blu-ray BD Live stuff or anything like
that.
Yeah,
I hate that crap when they don't do that. Stupid, stupid, stupid.
But there still is plenty of stuff. And if you don't have it, might as well pick it up on Blu-ray. And it does look fantastic. I mean, it's the remastered, you know, digitally redone for the DVD. But, of course, then they just struck it in higher definition.
Nice.
And so, if you know, big fans of Good and the Bad and the Ugly, there you go.
Right. So. All right. What's our stinker this week?
Well, you know, I kind of, even though it's been sort of somewhat of a low week, I couldn't find anything. But then I saw that Designing Women, the complete first season, was out, which I should have expected because they've already gotten all the Golden Girls out.
Nice.
So...
nice. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's your DVD roundup. It's time for us to move into review wrap-up time, and this is going to be easy.
Yep.
We both saw Up, and I said it totally rocks.
And I said it totally rocks.
And then we both saw Drag Me to Hell, and I also said it totally rocks.
And I agreed with you. We went up, we went down, and they were totally rocking both times.
And it's all good. I think it's a really good weekend to go out and see some movies. Next Absolutely. Weekend, who knows? We'll find out when we review Land of the Lost. We'll also hit The Hangover, and we'll talk about My Life in Ruins. In the meantime, if you'd like to get a hold of us, just get over to fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Search Fat Guys the Movies in the iTunes store, and we pop right up. You can email us, fatguysfilmschoolrejects.com, or give us a call, area code 614-388-8735. Did you get that right?
Yes.
All right. Any last words there, Mr. Carr?
A Sasquatch.
Nice. Adios. Audio. Bam.